Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
He talked about getting amazing. In trouble from his grandma for like taking pie tins out of the kitchen and trying to build guitars out of them.
Hey everybody, it is Patrick here. We are about to launch into a little series that I think will provide you some entertainment and also some historical background and information on an amazing musician, teacher, all-around artistic, one-of-a-kind person. And we may, if we're lucky, talk a little bit about cricket. So get ready. I have a special guest with me today, a voice that will be familiar to regular listeners of the podcast and certainly to those of you out there who participated in our Friday night hootenannies. It's Kurt Gallagher. Mr. Kurt, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much for suggesting this series of episodes and participating in this. I find it very fascinating, and have really enjoyed learning about it. Why don't you tell everybody what we're going to discuss?
We're going to talk about a guitar player who was based in New York City for most of his life, and his name is Reverend Gary Davis. And I'm going to try to argue that he is one of the most influential guitar players that ever lived, especially American guitar.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories that I've picked up over the years from people that knew him, and he had some famous students, so I'm sure we'll get into that soon enough.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love the way you suggested opening up this series, which was myself and you will both answer the question, when was the first time you heard of Reverend Gary Davis? And I'll start, if you don't mind. Like many things I heard about for the first time, I heard about it in this book right here, The Rolling Stone Record Guide. When I was in my formative years in high school, when I first got this book, I think this book came out in 83, I dutifully went through and wrote down every album that had a 4 or 5 star rating in this book. And it was a very long list. And I pledged to myself that one day, I would do it. And the one that got a 4-star listing in this book for the Reverend Gary Davis is a set on Yazoo, issued in 1970, the Reverend Gary Davis 1935 to 1949. So it's his blues material, not the secular stuff that he turned to later. And they have very high praise for his guitar playing. They call it in this book devilishly intricate 6- and 12-string guitar playing. So I love that phrase. And by the time I had tracked down this Reverend Gary Davis record, I had already gotten into John Fahey. So I wasn't entirely unfamiliar with what American primitive finger picking guitar playing was. But certainly his playing took it kind of to a different level. And the fact that he was blind on top of it, really kind of blew me away. So that was a lifelong quest. And when I got that record, I became a fan and have been ever since. So thanks once again to the Rolling Stone Record Guide. But how about you? How did you get into the Reverend?
I was just a kid, actually. My brother had a really nice record collection because he had a friend who used to shoplift records, and he had a really great collection. I worked at Burger King, so I could get like 1 or 2 records every month, but he had a nice collection. And there was one album in there that I liked a lot. It was Running on Empty by Jackson Browne. And on that album, there is a song called Cocaine. And Reverend Gary Davis gets the writing credit for that song. I think maybe Glenn Frey, someone from the Eagles, added some lyrics, but it's a Reverend Gary Davis song. And Is it Lindley, Donald Lindley, who played guitar with Jackson Browne? David Lindley, maybe?
Yeah, David Lindley, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's playing the Reverend Gary Davis guitar parts, and Jackson Browne is singing a song. And I back in those days, you used to look at the album art and read the notes, and I would just pore over all these albums. And I just, that name stuck in my head because I really liked that song, Reverend Gary Davis. And then, you know, I didn't hear about him again for like another 15 years. But that's, I remember that was the first time I saw his name.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people may have, you know, had that similar experience because that was a very popular album for Jackson Browne. So I guess one question I have for you, was Reverend Gary Davis born blind? Is that something we know definitively?
There's a couple different stories. Okay. Some people believe that he was born blind. Another story that he told once or twice, but no one has verified it, was that he had some sort of growth on his eyes. He called it an ulcer. I don't know if that's technically correct. Dr. Bob could probably straighten this out on that. But he had some sort of cataract or growth on his eyes. And someone, a doctor, they took him to a doctor and they put drops on his eyes. And then those drops had the opposite effect of what they were going for. And then he was blind. But he was definitely blind from infancy.
Okay.
So that he was very young. He told that story. He was very young at the time that happened when he tells the story. But other people just think that he was born blind. There's no proof of either story. But he was okay. he was born very, very poor, like a sharecropper's son. And his father sort of took off. And his mother was too young to raise him, so he was raised by his grandparents in a really small one horse town. I don't know if it still is today, but it was called Lawrence, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And he was born on April 30th, 1896.
And Kurt, you recommended a documentary that's out there, and we'll probably reference that throughout the recording or at times. And in that documentary, which I believe is called Harlem Street Singer, is that right? And it's available out there on YouTube. You can rent it if you want, and it's well worth it. They talked about his early life, and he was attracted to music right from the beginning. And at one point he made a guitar from a tin pan, like somebody help him actually do that.
He talked about getting in trouble from his grandma for like taking pie tins out of the kitchen and trying to build guitars out of them.
That's incredible.
He said he heard the sound of a marching band or like a minstrel band that was passing through, and he just wanted to recreate that sound. He was blind and he didn't know, you know, how that sound was being made. I guess he had heard about a banjo or a guitar, and he tried to make one himself. he also, someone gave him a harmonica from a young age, and he was a really good harmonica player too.
Oh, right. Yeah. I think hearing about that, right. The early part of his life, I find very interesting because it is involved with a kind of blues music, a scene, a regional development of blues music that maybe isn't as well known or as credited, you know, as the stuff that happened in Chicago or other places. But it was based around Durham, North Carolina, right? It was a Piedmont blues, I guess, is essentially the name that we give it these days. Tell us a little bit about that.
There was a really thriving music scene in Durham. That was where a lot of the tobacco trade was happening. And these guys, Reverend Gary Davis and Blind Boy Fuller and Blind Willie Johnson, would go to these big tobacco warehouses, and they would sort of busk there and play for the people who were driving in from the country to sell their tobacco. So this was in the 30s. It must have been during Prohibition, but somehow there was like there was whiskey there.
Yeah.
And these farmers are coming in to sell their tobacco, and all of a sudden they had money, and they were hanging out in these warehouses and partying after selling their tobacco. And these guys, you know, that played blues guitar hung out in those tobacco warehouses and played blues music and played solo guitar for these farmers. And there was a really thriving scene.
There's a great big mystery, and it sure is worrying me. This diddy war did it. This diddy war did it. I wish somebody would tell me what diddy war did it mean. The little girl about 4 feet four. Come on, Papa, and give me some more of your diddy war did it. Your diddy war did it. I wish somebody would tell me what diddy war did it mean. I went out and walked around. Somebody yelled, say, look who's in town. Mr. Diddy war did it. Mr. Diddy war did it. I wish somebody would tell me what diddy war did it mean. Put my head on his seat. Lady said on his seat, Daddy, you sure is sweet. Mr. Diddy war did it. Mr. Diddy war did it. I wish somebody would tell me what diddy war did it mean.
They talked to one person who was there during that time, and he said, I never heard Reverend Gary Davis ever ask anybody for money. They would just give it to him, you know, and his hat would be full by the end of the night, which is pretty incredible.
But he learned how to be really tough. We'll talk about that later. But he learned how, even though he was blind, he had to defend himself because, you know, he was playing on the street and there was a hat full of money there and he had to protect that money. So we can talk later about how he protected himself from people stealing his money.
That's great. I never actually thought of that, but that's such a salient point in this situation. Kurt, how does Piedmont blues differ from Delta blues?
Piedmont blues, there's always exceptions, but for the most part, the guys that were playing in the Piedmont scene, which goes from like Southern Virginia all the way down to Florida, is the way to describe it. Most of the guitar players played in a standard tuning, and it was influenced by ragtime. So there was a little more harmony in the Piedmont blues guitar. There was more chords, like the Blind Boy Fuller song Truckin' My Blues Away has like 8 chords in it.
With them gonna show shoot you down. Keep on trucking, mama. Trucking my blues away. Trucking my blues away. Keep on trucking, mama. Trucking my blues away. Keep on trucking, mama. Here you truck my blues away. I got a gal, she's little and neat. When she starts trucking, man, it's so sweet. Keep on trucking, mama. Truckin' my blues away, truckin' my blues away. Keep on truckin', baby, truckin' my blues away, yeah. Keep on truckin', baby, truckin' my blues away. I know a gal, she's long and tall. When she starts truckin', make a little man squall. Keep on truckin', mama. Truckin' my blues away. Truckin' my blues away, yeah.
So it wasn't just like three chords and the truth. There was a little more, I call it bounce in the bass lines, because they were moving around chords, and a guy like Reverend Gary Davis would do all these like walk-ups to the different chords, and you get these really active bass lines. And I just call it, you know, that it has a bounce. That's the difference between Piedmont and Delta. I'm not saying Piedmont is better. I know it better because I learned from people who are in the Piedmont tradition, but it's standard tuning. You can play more chords, you can have minor chords, you can have seventh chords. The Delta blues was mostly open tunings, so you would tune your guitar to like a D major or a G major and move up the neck with a slide. Oh, so Piedmont players didn't use the slide very often. There's exceptions. They did use a slide, but the Delta guys had slides. They were using slides, like either a knife or a bottle, you know, the top of a bottle, or just a slide. There might have been people making guitar slides back then, or even like a wrench, like a socket wrench.
Yeah.
But they would tune to a chord and go up and down the neck with their slide. That was like Delta blues. And Delta blues is known for that, like that moaning, howling, very expressive singing that goes way up. And it's just like, it's that expressive sound that you get from that deep, dark Delta stuff, like Robert Johnson, Charlie Patton, Son House, Skip James. You don't really hear that as much in the Piedmont. Piedmont is more like ragtime, like a bounce, that more of like a harmonic content with the bass line.
Including, if I don't miss my guess, Elizabeth Cotton, right? She would be considered part of the Piedmont tradition?
Most definitely, most definitely. Okay. If you listen to Freight Train, you can hear like the syncopation and the notes that are coming between, like she's got a really nice bass line going there, but she's like syncopating notes. And that's another trademark of Piedmont guitar playing, is the syncopation and the melodies against the bass line. Syncopation is just like the notes between the beats. If you just listen to the beginning of Freight Train, you can hear that. About Elizabeth Cotton's technique?
I don't think I do.
She was left-handed. She worked for the Seeger family. She was like a maid for the Seeger family.
Right.
And she was left-handed, and there was all these guitars laying around, but they were right-handed guitars. So she learned to play upside down. And in the Piedmont style, your thumb goes boom, chick, boom, chick, boom, chick, boom, chick. That's your thumb playing on strings six and four. She did that totally backwards. She played with her ring finger and her middle finger doing the boom chick with her like tiny fingers, and then she was playing the melody with her thumb.
That's crazy.
Which is totally upside down from all these other great players, but she came up with amazing stuff with that technique.
Fascinating stuff right there from Kurt Gallagher. Thank you, Kurt, very, very much. There is much, much more to come this week as we explore the life and influence of the guitarist and incredible teacher and all-around interesting figure, the Reverend Gary Davis. We did the introduction there, and we brought Reverend Davis's career up through the Piedmont years, and it gets pretty fascinating all the way through. So I hope you stick around and listen and hope you enjoyed this one. I want to say big thanks to Kurt Gallagher, and you're going to understand why he's a great person to be talking about this as the week goes on. So again, I hope everybody enjoys what you're going to hear. And with that, I'll tell you that we will be back for the next part of this series tomorrow. And I'd like to go out with a little bit of music from the Reverend Gary Davis, since we've mostly been sampling other tunes as we set up this podcast. So here's a little bit of Reverend Gary Davis, and we will talk to you guys for part two tomorrow.
Either a knife or a bottle, you know, the top of a bottle, or just a slide. There might have been people making guitar slides back then, or even like a wrench, like a socket wrench.